Welcome back to Spellbound. I'm Julian Smith.
I'm Andrew Rader.
And we're joined today by an old friend. David Perez is in the house. Thanks for being here, David.
Absolutely. Yes.
This is fun. Yes. Well, not too much fun yet. We're only just getting started, but it will be fun.
It'll be fun.
Last week, we had an awesome conversation with Sasha Sagan about her new book. And we were kind of talking about church and community centers. And we were joking about how there needs to be a church for the irreligious. And Andrew was talking about how, is that even going to be possible? Because, you had a question that you raised about, like, does the supernatural aspect of church, is that ultimately what unifies people? And if you take that element out, does it lose the appeal of church altogether? And I
instantly thought of, does it provide some glue? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And I instantly thought of David because, David, you're doing a really cool thing here in Nashville. And I thought maybe a good place to start would be to just let you talk about your history as a pastor, because you've been a pastor for 25 years or something, right?
Yeah, that's right. 25. You nailed it.
Yeah, I nailed it.
Yeah, 25 years.
And yes. You were a pastor at the largest church in America at one point.
I wasn't the lead pastor, but yes, I was in my 30s. I was about your age, and I was a young minister, young reverend at a large church in Chicago, Illinois. In fact, why they hired me, Jules, was to build this whole community thing.
Okay,
that's why I initially got hired, because I was a campus pastor. And so I don't know how much you guys know about the church growth, the crazy church growth movement of the 90s. But when churches moved to this whole small group community, let's build community, they go, there's no ministers in the country that know how to do it. The only people that know how to do it are campus ministers, young pastors who are working on campuses. So that's how I got hired. Yes.
I thought this would just be an interesting chat on the heels of last week's conversation, and because of what David's doing here in town. You want to talk a little bit about Sparrow Day and what you've been doing recently?
Yes.
So, and maybe your journey that led you to...
Yeah, I'm doing something absolutely crazy, which is I am launching a progressive, non-evangelical Christian church in the Bible Belt South. So it really comes from my own spiritual deconstruction. So about 10 years ago, what happens when the minister has a crisis of faith? What happens when the minister doesn't believe the thing anymore? And you have the corner office and you have 1,000 people coming to your church. So that's what was happening. There were certain
more than that when I met you.
What's right.
Like 5,000 or something.
Yeah, well, not quite that, but big. And and so what happens is I go through an existential crisis of, I don't know if I believe in this stuff anymore, but my whole psychological identity is wrapped in it. You know, I'm 50 years old, or late 40s, mid 40s, and I'm not sure I believe it anymore. It's been my career for 2 decades. It's my entire friendship base, my entire community.
Right.
So that's an interesting question, because I lost my community. So when you change your beliefs, the community can kind of go, there's the door.
Yeah.
So,
and I've experienced that too. And that kind of came up last week with Sasha, this whole dynamic. And we were talking about how important Sasha's new book is all about rituals. And so that's kind of what we were talking about, rituals and how important they are, no matter what you think and what you believe about this universe. And I think that her book is really timely because, you know, what I see is like, having grown up in the church and stuff, like, I feel like so many people are kind of leaving that habit, that ritual. And I think some of it is maybe for the better. Like, people are kind of waking up, and a lot of people are like, on a journey personally. But I also think that community is so important. And that's kind of one of the things we kept talking about last week is the community aspect of what church is, or a temple or a mosque or whatever it is, you know.
Sure.
So you said it's Spiro Dei, so it's Latin. Spiro. Day of God, obviously.
Is that, yeah, it's...
And
yeah,
Spiro it's, is...
Sparrow. What is that? Yeah, we pronounce it like the bird, sparrow. But it means... It could mean two things in Latin. It could either mean hope or it could mean trust. And then, of course, Dei is one of the Latin words for God. Yeah.
It's a bit like espiritu, right? Like spirit, is that the same root or something as the hope one, maybe?
Yeah, it is, yeah. And even it's close to the Italian form of it as well, but yeah.
So I guess it's unclear to me. You said you had a crisis of faith. Was it with everything or just parts of it? Or, I mean... Is it still like a church with religion and Jesus as the Savior, Son of God, that kind of thing? Or is it, you know, how much does it preserve of mainstream Christianity or the core of Christian principles and beliefs?
Yeah, can I add a word? Are you part, when you say mainstream, are you partly saying Orthodox? How much part of it, is it part of Orthodox Christianity? I guess Eastern Orthodox.
Okay, so there's different branches of Christianity, and but fundamentally they're all based on the Bible. Like, I would say that Christians believe the Bible, if not literally true, parts of it are at least true. Like Jesus' life, I think Christians would generally believe are true. Historical events, essentially, and that Jesus, I mean, I think the core belief of Christianity is that Jesus died for our sins and was resurrected and was the Son of God and was resurrected kind of as the Savior of humanity, basically, on Easter, right? So I think that's the core Christian belief, different from the other Abrahamic beliefs. Like, they sort of start with the Old Testament, which is like Judaism, but then add on, and Jesus was the Son of God, the Messiah, basically. And that's like the core Christian belief. So would you say that you follow that? Or I mean, do you accept that? And do you teach that? Or is that all gone too?
Well, it depends what you mean by belief. So I think, Andrew, that's what's in flux. So let's say the Western popular form of American Christianity, whether it's Protestant, probably mostly Protestant, but certainly Catholic, would certainly, yes, we would be well familiar with the narrative you just kind of talked about. But if you think about Protestants and their form of salvation being penal substitution, or a Franciscan priest who would rely more on the Christmas story, that their salvation just came more from Christ's presence, I would say what you're recounting is, yes, what is a popular narrative. But I think what's happening in 21st century Christianity, certainly in the West and specifically in America, that is what is in flux and changing because of belief. This is why we named our church Spiro Dei, because Spiro means trust. So I tend to think that faith is not belief. A belief is a mental agreement. So if you go, a 15-year-old Virgin Mary had a son named Jesus, and someone goes, well, I believe in that, and they're saying that in 2019, I believe in that. I'm not saying they don't believe in that, but what I'm saying is that's not faith. Faith is trust. It's a present relational, it's actually a communal experience. A belief is just a belief. So you get two people that go, I don't believe a 15-year-old virgin can have a baby. And another person goes, well, I believe they do. The difference between the two is the one just made a mental agreement. Okay, I don't believe in it. Okay, now I do. I believe that. And what I'm saying is beliefs and faith are two different things. And I think one of the things you're seeing in the American progressive Christian movement is this separation between both. So certain beliefs give identity. So certain denominations, certain Christian religions, certain world religions have certain beliefs that give them identity. But that doesn't mean it's trust.
So how would you define faith in that case? So I've always understood faith to be essentially like a leap of faith. You don't really have evidence that supports something, but you're going, I mean, I kind of do think it's like belief in a sense. You're forcing yourself to believe something, or forcing might be a strong word, but you're motivating yourself to accept something as fact.
I want to answer that. Can I ask you a couple questions about you?
Absolutely. Yeah, sure.
So do you have an existential belief in something? Do you believe in a higher being, higher power, that we're not alone, that there's something else? Do you?
Not really, no. Only in a very...
Andrew's very practical.
Well, only in a sense that maybe, I mean, the universe is an amazing place, and it's like the fundamental idea of existence, the fact that there's something rather than nothing, and the fact that we're all, I'm going to use a religious term, blessed to be here. Just the crazy probabilities of the universe leading to us at this very narrow window in time. I mean, the universe is billions of years. It's already been around for 13 billion years. We live in 100 years, this tiny little window of time. So just the idea of existence and the fact that there's something rather than nothing, that totally blows the mind. So we can be, like, I'm totally awed by the universe, and I think it's incredible and amazing and just wonderful. But I don't really believe in a higher power per se. I mean, I kind of think it just is. It's so wonderful and amazing and mind-blowing, but it kind of just is.
Well, I think you may know this more than me, but wasn't it Einstein who said something, when we wake up in our universe, we can either think it's a good universe, it's an altruistic, loving universe, or we can think it's hell and that it's suffering and we have to do battle. It doesn't mean that isn't hurtful things in the world, but I think what Einstein was basically saying, it's generally, the universe is generally good. And so one more question, and then you may be surprised by my point. So I think listening to you, you then disregard supernaturalism. Is that correct?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, so the word supernatural means beyond nature, meaning unexplainable, things that are not observable, things that are beyond science, things that are immeasurable, things that break the rules as we know them. So there's certain rules of the universe that are basically science, like the physical constants and just how gravity works, for example, observable universe. And then that's basically supernatural means beyond those rules, meaning magic, essentially. It's really no different from magic. It's like we have these rules and then we have something happens and it's beyond our understanding of the rules.
Yeah. And what's crazy is, as a Christian, I agree with you. So as a Christian, I'm not a supernatural theologian. I'm a natural theologian. So the narrative that you were first recounting of Christianity, that is a narrative of supernaturalism. So yes, probably most Christians have held to their form of theology is supernaturalism. There's a divine being outside of their natural realm who then, almost like our Marvel universe, can zoom in, zoom out.
Yeah, exactly.
This God God. This God looks like us. So we have an anamorphic relation with this God. He sort of looks like us and talks like us, but he's supernatural. As a Christian, I don't hold to that. So, and I think this is part of the progression where you asked a moment ago, well, then what is faith then? And so when you think of faith as beliefs, that a lot of that narrative is based on supernaturalism. Do I believe in this superhero God that exists or not? And what I would say is a natural theologian, Christianity, the Christian narrative, parts of the Christian narrative are a comfortable narrative for me in the sense that it's anamorphic. It helps make things tangible to me. So therefore, I have belief in it. But I'm not saying I think that is absolutely true. That is the best means of me explaining it to who? To me. But this sense of the divine, the sense of the transcendent may even be beyond supernaturalism. And I tend to think that as a believer in an existential divine presence, and we'll call that God. God works within naturalism. So this is where I very much where a scientist is very much, I go, a scientist is sort of like a theologian, so.
Yeah. Let me take a stab at this, because I see what Andrew's getting at. I think, you know, ultimately what I want to get to, and I think we can't get there until we all understand each other's point of view, is the importance of community, because I believe that community is at the foundation of what holds civilization together. And if that wasn't true, we would never have invented civilization, and we'd still be hunter-gatherers out fending for ourselves, and we'd just pretty much stick to our own bloodlines, and everybody else would be an enemy. So I think, like, you know, as mammals, we're incentivized to protect the communal foundations of society. And I think that, you know, in this era with, like, the internet and technology and how easy it is to access information, a lot of people aren't really engaging in their communities like they used to, as far as church and things like that go. And I realize that church is a loaded word for a lot of people. So I say that, like, you know, when I'm saying church, I'm really talking about, like, you know, a temple or a mosque or whatever, or an irreligious communal gathering, but like a habitual communal thing. And I think one point Andrew made last week that was really interesting is that atheists, like, don't want to belong to any club that would accept them. I thought that was really funny.
Sure.
And so I'm like, sure. Well, you know, this is actually kind of a conundrum, because if we're mammals and we thrive when we work together and we thrive when we are communal, then what does that say about society that we're disengaging from these community centers? We'll call them the churches, the mosques, the temples, you know, et cetera. So that's ultimately what I want to get to, but I also want to dial this in a little further. David, would you talk a little bit about, actually, and I want to say a couple of things just to back up a little bit and set you up. I should have done this at the beginning, but I just want people to know, just for the listeners, that the way we met was so interesting, because you were, I was working for this church. You were very early on when I started working there. I was running the video department. This was in 2005, I think. Very early on, you were the new pastor at the church. You were coming in fresh. You and I really got along because you had a film background. You studied at USC. And you minored in what area of filmmaking did you?
Well, I was a literature major. Okay. And then I was a film cinema minor.
Okay. Yep. And now you're studying at Harvard or Yale or?
I'm at Harvard.
You're at Harvard, yep. And you're studying religion?
Religion. Yep.
Okay. I just wanted to kind of establish those two things. A, that David and I have, like, a film background relation, and also that you're studying religion at Harvard, which I think is really, gives you an interesting perspective into this conversation. So what I'd like to hear you talk about, David, is the spiritual, like, we'll call it a disenfranchisement that you had, or like, you know, the religious, like, struggle that you had at running the church where you were, and what that journey was like for you, and what caused you to want to start a church that was a more like provocative take on Christianity, because I know you and I've had endless conversations about this, and I know that there's been a lot of people who you've been disappointed to see stop going to your gatherings because you're not preaching biblical literalism. You're not preaching that these things are like history. These things are like fact. You know, like, you've got to believe X, Y, Z. As far from where I sit and from the conversations we've had, I gather that you're somebody that's just a fan of Jesus, and you believe that he had life pretty much figured out for the most part. And I think Jesus made a lot of societal observations that were highly important at the time, you know, because Rome was the biggest civilization of its time. And there was a lot of problems that Jesus was calling out. And so I think that Jesus is an interesting figure from that point, because he made a lot of really poignant observations. But I'd like to, for Andrew to hear and for the listeners to hear your journey as a pastor, a very, you know, prominent pastor in America, for numerous churches, and just what that journey was like, and what caused you to start a church like Sparrow Day.
Yeah, and keeping this on community or relationships, community, part of the faith crisis dealt with community because, you know, as I was listening to you guys talk about community, it still would warrant the question, what is community? And so I think one of the facets of community is it's not just relationships. It has to be safe, that people can be free to be truly who they are. So you can know and be known, you can love and be loved. And it's a safe place. But when the communal structure is built on certain beliefs, that suddenly you don't hold those beliefs anymore, well, then you can be kicked out of the community. And what that means is the community was never that safe anyway.
Right.
So when I was in a church structure that said, these are the right things to believe, and these are definitely the wrong things to believe, well, you always know that. You always know that. So as you grow and evolve, you'll go, well, can I share what I think? Can I share what I no longer do believe? And so part of my deconstruction has to do with community. It's I need to be part of safe relationships where I'm free to be true to who I am. So it wasn't just a head thing like, do I believe this and suddenly I don't believe this? No, it was more a communal relational thing as well. There were parts of my heart and parts of my relationships that no longer felt safe. So I go, you know, if you're that other minister or other pastor, and I tell you now what I don't believe, I could lose my job. You could not be my friend anymore. So I have lost part of my community.
Yeah.
I have.
And I have too. I can share that with you. That's a very unfortunate thing that happens.
It's hard. Yes. And so I think at times it begs the question of what is community. Anyway, I happen to hold to at least psychologically attachment theory. So I do think as human beings, we're meant to be attached mm-hmm. to other people. But the way attachment really works is I have to ultimately feel safe and cared for and protected and vice versa. So when there is a breakdown in that, community is either phony. People can play community. You've been to plenty of churches where people are...
They play community.
Yeah, are getting along.
Yeah.
Not really. Yeah. Or you've been in communities where you go, it all looks good on the outside, but if I let somebody know who I really am, I'm going to be asked to not be part of it. Yeah. So that was actually even part of my faith deconstruction.
What do you think it is that is holding this kind of a reform back from these community centers? Do you think it's like a power struggle, or do you think it's like power being like the people running these institutions or the religions themselves or the churches, or you think it's like power that's keeping people afraid of change, or do you think it's and maybe I'm misled here, but I think what we kind of deduced last week with Sasha is that we were all saying, wouldn't it be nice if there was a place where people could just get together every week and like not care what everybody thinks, you know, and not really make it like this like hyper, you know, miracles, prophecies, like voodoo kind of thing, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think, I don't know if you guys saw the Pew Research study that just came out. Just a couple of days ago, I think it may have come out Friday or Thursday. So in the last 10 years, it's really been epic. In the last 10 years, the American Christian Church has had a 12% drop, right? So this wasn't a landscape study. This study was mostly a phone study, 35,000 people. It just asked 10 questions, why are you leaving the church? But a number of years ago, Pew, as well as Gallup, did what's called a landscape study to talk to people, why are they leaving? Why are they leaving the church? Mm-hmm. And part of it has to do with community. So when you have a belief system built on three beliefs, literalism, the Bible is the literal word of God, inerrancy, the Bible is, there's no errors in the Bible. And when you have another belief, the Bible is infallible, it is right on everything it teaches, that creates a very rigid structure, and it makes friendships or relationships, especially in a 21st century way, very vulnerable. So right before I came to have to be with you guys, I had lunch with a wonderful gay couple who are my friends and who attend our church. So there are most churches in America, the belief system, the Christian belief system, would not allow them to be there because of these three beliefs. So these are people that felt once kicked out of a community, and now they feel included into a community. So I think what's happening in the Western church does relate to community. If people are going, I can't go to a church where my Jewish friends aren't loved. I can't go to a church where my gay friends aren't loved. And so what you're seeing is millennials are leaving this rigid belief system, and it partly has to do with community. It has to do with other things, but part of it is I can't be part of a belief system where the people I love are also not loved.
I think that's excellent. And it's similar to my mother's church, which I think is largely based on community. Her minister says all the time, oh, those are just stories. You know, they're metaphors basically in the Bible and parables, and, you know, they're for teaching and learning things and insight, human insight and history, all kinds of other values other than literal truth. And they even have gay ministers, for example. It's very inclusive. But I do wonder, you know, at some point, it's not religion anymore. If you're kind of taking away these beliefs, right? If you're stripping away some of the supernatural elements, I mean, I guess it's kind of, you could say it's religion in the sense that maybe Buddhism is just thinking Buddha was a wise teacher, just like Jesus was a wise teacher. And even Richard Dawkins, kind of the...
Well, Zen Buddhism isn't a religion.
Pardon me?
I said, well, I didn't mean to interrupt, but Zen Buddhism is not considered a religion, to your point.
Well, exactly, exactly. And at that point, is it a religion? I mean, it's maybe following teachings and philosophy and sort of a way of living your life and that sort of thing. And I mean, Richard Dawkins even, who's kind of like the number one bulldog atheist in the world, always says he is a t-shirt, I guess, and they had put it on a bus and stuff, atheist for Jesus, because he thinks Jesus is excellent, right? Like Jesus had a lot of great ideas and he's a very good moral teacher. And had the thing is, a lot of Christians in America don't really follow the teaching of Jesus very well. I mean, Jesus was like, it's easier for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle than for rich people to get into heaven, basically. And it's all about redistribution of wealth. I mean, Jesus was a socialist, bar none. Like, I mean, probably, possibly a communist. He was like Bernie Sanders with sandals walking the earth.
Sure, hilarious. Yes.
The accumulation of wealth and all this kind of stuff that America really stands for. So, and very accepting, right? Like, Jesus probably would have been one of the first to accept gay people and all this kind of stuff. So
totally,
really strange that Christianity in America is so different from the teaching of Jesus. And if you strip away all this religion and just make it a community, then it's not really religion anymore, right? I mean, there's elements. So it's kind of separable in a sense. There's the community part and then the kind of beliefs part, and you can separate them and keep it. Like Arthur C. Clarke had this thing where the future religion is Krishlam, because it's amalgamation of Christianity and Islam. It's kind of like what you're talking about. Krishlam.
Sure.
And it kind of takes all the beliefs and amalgamates them, makes it like this one thing. But what's the difference between just having that and then just a community center where one day we're gonna study the teachings of Buddha, and the next day we're gonna study the teachings of Jesus, and the next day we're gonna look to yoga or something like that, right?
Yeah.
To me, like if you, I agree that that's the way to go with community, but also it seems like it is taking away the religion from the religion.
No, I think your points are well made. I don't know, Andrew, if I can answer that for everybody, and I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if I have an absolute answer on that. I can tell you what I experience.
We're gonna take a quick break, but don't go anywhere. We're coming right back. I promise.
So I don't hold the Christian philosophy. I don't hold the Christian principles. I have a present experience with the God that is comfortable for me to call Christ. So I never, no, that's not true. I was going to say I never thought about leaving Christianity. No, when I was in my full faith crisis, I was ready to bag the whole thing, no doubt. But the person of Jesus, granted, from my 21st century view, I'm admitting that, is a comfortable expression for this existential divine. And I experience that, and in a sense of worship, I feel attached. So I think one of Jesus's foundational teachings is really the great command of love. So when Jesus was trying to be tricked by the people in my job, the reverends, the ministers, the pastors of his day, when he was being pulled aside saying, hey, what's the most important thing about theology, religion, belief, the Bible? What's the most important thing? He goes to a couple verses from the Old Testament. Just basically, it's about love. It's about being attached, lovingly attached to three things: God, the divine, something larger than you, to other people. It's loving people and caring about them in a sense, in an unconditional way, empathetic, compassionate way, a way that God would. And it's about being attached to yourself. It's about being loving yourself. That's not narcissism. In fact, I'd make the argument that narcissists don't have love for themselves, but we don't need to go there. But so I think I experience that presently. So let's take a New Testament or Old Testament story. Those stories are important to me in the sense of my trust. I'm not trying to figure out whether I believe them, meaning are they true or not true. What it is I experience them now. So in that sense, I am a Christian who worships Jesus. I'm not holding to Christian philosophy or Christianism or Christian ideology. So it is something I experience, and I do consider myself a worshiper. What's also true about my, though at least the way I view it, I don't necessarily view people then on the outside. If they don't hold my view of the divine, I don't have old terms that I used to do. They're a non-believer, or they're on the outside, or we need to save them. So I would say I'm a Christian as far as I'm a worshiper of Jesus Christ. To your point at the start of all this, yes, that is Christian. What is Christianity? They are worshipers of Christ.
Yeah, and I think also a big distinction between Buddhism and Christianity is that, you know, you just said Christianity is all about like love. That's mainly what Jesus taught about, was that's his main concern is love and being a good neighbor and how you should interact with other people in your community, how you should treat them. Whereas like Buddhism is all about, and I think this is why it's not really considered a religion. It's not so much about community. It has nothing to do with community. Buddhism is all about how to relinquish desire, how to just like manage your personal, like perspective, like just be level-headed and
real quick, I would say that depends on the Buddhist you speak to.
Yeah, well, there is institutionalized, yes, Buddhism, but yeah. Zen Buddhism, like the original Buddhism, is
philosophical.
Yeah, it's purely philosophical. Right. Yeah, I don't want to get too hung up on particulars about what each of us think or don't think, because that's not really the conversation I'm interested in. And ultimately, if you get hung up there, you're going to get stuck no matter who you're talking to, because nobody thinks exactly the same thing about everything. So it's almost like a moot point. What I'm interested in is this community thing. And instead of saying church, I'm just going to use the term community center, because I think that's like, it applies to all of them. But I think that they're so important to the way everything is structured in society and just like bringing people together. And I think it's really sad how, in, you know, at least it seems like, I haven't been alive for several centuries, so I can't really say, but from history books and stuff, it seems like the longer we've gone on, the more and more legalistic all of these community centers have become. And like, you have to hold to a certain set of rules or you can't be in the club, you know? And you could also say that it's getting more relaxed in some in some ways. Like you have a lot of Christian church and Christian churches in progressive cities where they now accept they won't kick you out if you're gay, or they'll let women preach and things like that, and things that used to be really controversial, you know. So you could say it's getting more relaxed in certain ways, but I also think like because of how, and I don't know what it is, if it's like, if it's just, if there's just a general polarization of ideas in America, but it seems like, especially with church, and my experience over the last, you know, 15 years has been very much this, that the more and more I'm a free thinker, the more and more I'm excluded from my original community as a kid, including family and including, you know, old friends and people that were once and are still are very dear to me. I'm just not very dear to them, apparently, so, you know, for whatever that's worth. But what I think is missing and what I wish could exist is this thing we were talking about last week. And that's why you're here, is like, this is because I thought of you, because we were talking about this, like, yeah, this more accepting community center, right, you know? Yeah. And I think that's what you're onto at Sparrow Day. Now, granted, you're here in Nashville, and this is the, as you said, the Bible, it's the buckle of the Bible Belt, you know? So there's a very specific kind of, market here, you could say.
Yeah.
But I also think that, you know, I know from knowing you for so long, David, that if a Muslim were to walk into your church, you wouldn't turn them away because they were a Muslim. I know you would accept anybody of any walk of life.
Nor try to convert them.
Yeah, because that's not what it's about for you. And that's why you're here, is because I know that about you. And I know that, and I think maybe what we're after here is evangelicalism. I think that's maybe the problem, because if your goal is just to convert people to think exactly like you, that's going to be a never-ending job, you know?
Yeah, when you say, I mean, that's political parties do that.
Yeah.
Religions do that. My goodness, fraternities. The work birthday party might do the same. Or the moms, you know, get the moms club together.
Yeah.
No, I think, don't you think we're all on this journey? Part of building community, at least for me, this is for me, I've had to do my own deep work. So it hasn't been just, hey, get my buddies together because we all like each other. It certainly includes that. But there has had to be a deeper work that I've had to do in my own personal life of what biases do I have? What prejudices do I have? What judgments do I have? Because this is what either draws people to community and make it safe, or this is what sends messages of, hey, you can be part of the community as long as you're, you know, dot, mm-hmm. dot, dot. So I don't know if that's what you're saying, but yes, we have what's called city groups at Sparrow Day. And I mean, I'd say in some ways they run like a 12-step group. They're places where people have free think and can be true to themselves. Of course, people have to show respect, but I can go there and tell my story, and that story is honored and lauded and accepted, even if it's a story of brokenness or shame, versus, hey, thanks for coming to the group tonight. Now, here's what we believe, and if you want to really stay in the group, you know, so I love that we're building this kind of community. So my wife's a therapist as well. So we're bringing, I think, just good psychology in addition to our theology. Why? For relationship's sake, because people, I think of my, I want my church to be friendly, sure, but people aren't coming to our church just to find friendliness. They're looking for friends. They mm-hmm. want to connect deeply with people. Certainly we have a kindredness when we have a like interest. Certainly we can chum out a little better when we have a like affinity. There's no doubt. It doesn't mean I have to get along with everybody in the world, but the moment you take away, I can be who I am, and the moment you take away some sort of safety that if I expose myself, I'll get thunked for it, that is the detriment to community. And so this is what we're trying to build. And yes, very rigid religion has been one of the key thumpers of that, or rigid politics or partisan politics or certain social issues. Yeah.
So if I can take a stab here at trying to resolve Andrew's question from earlier about when does it stop being religion, I would, is it that for you personally at Sparrow Day, that because you're not out to change, or because arguably because you don't care what people think existentially or religiously, you could say, because you don't care, and that's like a non-issue for you, and you're not going to like try to convert them to your ideology or whatever it is, your personal philosophy, you're just happy that they're there. Is it just because you guys aren't like evangelical, or is it that you're just there to build a community, or is it what is the reason?
Yeah. I mean, listening to you, I go, gosh, I got to go to work tomorrow, and even I'm confused.
Yeah.
I'm at a place where my take, and I'm admitting it's my take on Christianity is working for me.
Well, your take is beside the point. That's not what I'm hoping to get at, because that's and I'm not trying to cut you off. I just don't want you to feel on the spot either.
No, and I don't. Here's what I mean. So I don't mind sharing that with you, whoever you are.
Yeah.
But that's different than proselytizing.
Right.
That's different than converting. So if you came to our church today, you would have heard music. It's in a sense, what you think of Christian worship music. If you would have listened to me speak, I would have spoke on what you think of a Christian narrative. And I'm certainly happy about where I'm at and believe. And I go, hey, it's working for me. Maybe it'll work for you. That's different than you saying to me, well, I don't think it's going to work for me. Like you saw when Rabbi Flip was there.
Yeah.
So Flip didn't walk off the stage, and I didn't say, hey, everybody, let's pray for Flip. He's not a Christian.
Yeah.
And his eternal destiny is Flip's Judaism is working for him. So I share my Christianity with the great hope that I still believe Jesus is a compelling, and the teachings of Christ and who he was. I still find that compelling. That's still different than evangelizing, converting, and proselytizing in a rigid way. So no, it's not, like I said, it's not even a Christian community. It's a church. I mean, it's a place where I think if you walked in today, Andrew, you would go, it's very much a church. It's a house of worship. I'll use an old term. Yeah, it's a house of worship. But I do think it would be different than being, you would sense like, oh my gosh, if I don't buy in. I know, Julian, I know we have people sitting in our church that are there for the community. They go, I don't even know if I believe in it yet, or believe what the guy is saying, but I'm feeling loved and cared for and safe. I'm feeling true. The altruistic thing that they're part of, I like. And so, you know, I know in our church we have all kinds of folks.
So it's Christianity, but it's sort of like a really accepting version of Christianity, but still Christianity. So your example is like, if a Muslim comes in, they'll be accepted, and that's excellent. I like what I'm hearing. But the thing is, it's still like a soccer game. So you have a football fan coming to the soccer game, we're showing soccer, right? We're not talking about Muhammad and the Quran. We're talking about Jesus and the Bible. So you're welcome to listen as much as you'd like, but we're still going to have this soccer game, right? So I guess that's fine. I mean, I guess you're not trying to be universal in the sense that you're trying to appeal to everyone. People come from different backgrounds. They have different contexts, and that's okay. And so it's appealing to a North American / European, African, South American context that comes from Christianity as a start. It's nice that it's accepting, but, you know, and you're not trying to convert people. But at the same time, I don't think it's reasonable to suppose that it's going to attract large numbers of Muslims or Jews or anyone else, because it's just not that thing. It's a soccer game, right? So it's not that universal, non-religious kind of church, per se, that we're talking about, which is totally fine. The other thing is that I find interesting is you use the word worship, which to me does imply supernatural because you don't, I guess you could say worship a king or something like that. Although in this day and age, it would not be something you would want to do. So it does seem
worship
like,
just means kiss. It does have a loaded connotation these days, but yeah, it just means to kiss. You used to kiss a seal or something.
Totally,
you know?
Different plane. Like, yeah. You know, it implies bowing down and like you are inferior basically to this superior being, right? So to me, by definition, that implies supernatural, because if there's a superior being, it means it's on a whole different plane or something like that, right? So that seems incongruous with Jesus being a moral teacher, a philosopher. Was Jesus human? Was he human who just had really great ideas, whose ideas we should invoke and implement as much as possible? Or was Jesus actually a son of God, a different kind of being that deserves to be worshipped? Because you wouldn't say worship Gandhi or Abraham Lincoln. He was a great president. He had great ideas and slavery, all this kind of stuff. We revere him, but we don't worship him.
Right.
Right. So what makes Jesus worthy of worship rather than just reverence and respect and understanding and implementing his ideas?
No, I think it's I also agree with you, Andrew. I think part of what we're talking about is a presumed or assumed construct of what worship is. So let me just take a contrarian view. I have a problem with it became increasingly uncomfortable for me that a worship expression was a lauding of a king, was a bowing down before a king and just saying, you're great, you're great, you're great, you're great, you're worthy of worship. So I admit that construct is there, and I partly stepped in that trap. That isn't necessarily what I mean. It's like I'm a father of two children. And so I remember with one of my particular children, child, when he was 5, 6 years old, if he felt anything of my disappointment, he would follow me around, go, I'm sorry, Daddy. I'm sorry, Daddy. I'm sorry, Daddy. I love you, Daddy. I love you, Daddy. I love you, Daddy. And I remember shutting the door to my bedroom, thinking at first of me going, what have I done to my son? What have I done to him that when he experiences...
Sorry, I'm laughing.
No. What have I done to my son that when he experiences my disappointment, this is his response? And of course, I'd pull him aside or get down and say, buddy, I love you. I care about you, right? That's part of being human. I partly think of worship as presence. So when two human beings, let's use this father-child illustration again, or mother-child. When a parent is in full presence of a child with a healthy religion, it would be weird for me to just sit there and go, I love you, Jesus. I love you, Jesus. I love you, Jesus. I bow down to you. I think he'd go, chill.
Yeah.
Chill. We have this, look, we have this good thing going. And so I'm admitting that the word creates a construct that I don't mean.
Yeah.
I do.
Jesus
I
probably
do
wouldn't
hold.
Want to be worshipped. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And he turned that down multiple times. He was like, he was always saying, like, I am not a king. You will do greater things than I will. He was saying that to his disciples. Like, I think that's right.
Yeah, and I remember in some of my kind of hardcore evangelical days, you might even remember this, Julian, you would be told things like, when we go to heaven, we'll just worship God all the time and we'll throw our crowns and things to him and worship him, and that'll be awesome. And I remember going, yeah, that sounds weird.
That sounds boring.
Yeah, boring and even weird. Yeah. So I do wonder sometimes, I'm admitting I'm giving a bit of a supernatural viewpoint. It's not what I really hold to, but go with the illustration. I do sometimes wonder if the God of the universe looks down, sees all this worship and goes, this is just weird.
Yeah.
To me, it's sort of like publicly making out with God. And so, So that's not what I mean. I probably more mean to the sense that I experience a presence of the divine, and I sense I'm connected to something or someone far greater than myself. And I'm very comfortable for me to call that expression Christ.
Yeah.
Very much.
Well, I think this is like part of the difficulty with these community with religion, with churches and things like that, is that these words like God, prayer, worship, they have such different meanings for every person. But I think that they're ultimately that everybody has some kind of slot for these terms. They might use different words. Like, for example, one of the things that, you know, I grew up in the church, I grew up fundamentalist Christian for the first like 18 years of my life. And one of the things that has replaced prayer in my life is meditation, you know? And I think that that's like, you know, that's something mm-hmm. that is yeah. ultimately tapping into the same mental space for me. It's like, you could even define meditation as tapping into something greater than yourself. You could say, I'm really stressed out. I'm going to stop. I'm going to breathe. I'm going to just not think about shit. And if my mind goes somewhere, I'm going to bring it back and I'm just going to keep breathing and I'm going to put this stress over here, you know, and I'm going to not open my eyes and think about anything else until the stress is on this other thing. And for me, you know, I was raised to think that meditation was like this evil thing that non-religious people did, you know. Right, right. And so, you know, now
it's going to pull you to the dark side.
Yeah.
Right.
Too late. Yeah. But, you know, I think like, I think that I've found personally that meditation is that same exact act. And so whether you call it prayer, whether you call it worship, whether you call it meditation, whether you call it God, whether you call it the universe, whether you call it quantum mechanics and randomness, I think it's all essentially the same idea that people are trying to get at. And I think it's all semantics. That's my opinion. And I think that that's the problem with a lot of these, you know, churches and religions and denominations, is that they get caught up in semantics and what words you're using, what language you're speaking.
Or doctrines, ideologies. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah. I think it's all basically the same. That's what I think. Maybe I'm wrong, but.
Well, that's why you have around the world so many different religions that are different in their teachings, but fill the same gap for people. Because they all offer the same things. I mean, it's true that humans have a need for religion, just our psychology, the way we've evolved. We want to believe in something bigger, and it's part of our curiosity and all this kind of thing. This is why you find religions all over the world. I mean, humans invented religion. It was one of the first things we did as humans, the ritual burial of our dead to explain what happened to them.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't hear your conversation last week with Ms. Sagan, but she was talking about traditions and rituals.
Yeah.
So, I just think of my own tradition, my own Christian tradition. Of course, we have built and created rituals and traditions to connect us. I think that's very human, to connect us to something larger than ourselves. I think that's a communal process. Mm-hmm. Obviously not shared for everybody. I'm not one of these Christians that when an atheist says they're an atheist, I then don't go, no, you're not really an atheist. No, I think there are truly people who are, they're an atheist. But for me, when I go to my deep existential childhood, forget my religious doctrine, I always felt I was connected to something greater, this flow. There's a great Christian theologian named Richard Rohr, where he talks about everything belongs. So whether it's at a quantum level, like something happens in Yakima, Washington, it's felt in Trenton, New Jersey, or whether it's a flow between human beings, or it is a community center. Yes, I still believe, I certainly may be wrong, but my hope is in this greater sense that there is a relational love, a universal love, that everything belongs. So whether we're discovering it in a quantum way, a psychological way, a theological way, or you're just going out for a beer with a friend, I think there is something there that relates to all of those things.
I guess moving towards wrapping this up, because we're almost at an hour here, what's so important to me about this is just thinking about, and we've kind of already touched on it, but just to go a little, to dial it in a little more, you know, we're mammals. We're not reptiles. We don't eat our babies. We don't eat each other. There are some cannibals, but we're not advocating that. But, you know, we thrive on this community thing. We, you know, hunting in packs, it proved beneficial. It yielded bigger games. So, you know, therefore mammals. So, you know, it's good to be a mammal. It's good to honor your mammalian instincts, no matter how you contextualize them, no matter what you make of them, no matter how they, you know, how they work for you to think of them. You've got to tap into those and make them work for you. If you're going to participate in society in a way that's going to be constructive for everyone, if you're going to build relationships, if you're going to, if you can't work together, if you can't collaborate with people, if you can't maintain relationships, then if everybody was like that, I don't think we would have ever invented civilization to start with. We would still be on our own in the wild. So I think that, Andrew's making a terrible face.
I was going to say this.
It was inadvertent.
Yeah, sorry. I'm going to sound like a Hallmark card at this point. But listen, I still believe in love, and still, whether it's sentient beings or some flow of the universe, whether it's evolutionary within us or it is some God divine thing. My life lives and responds to it. I know when I receive it. I know when I'm giving it. I know when I've been dinged by it and hurt by it. I know when I'm disconnected to it. And I long to experience that love. And yes, my current religion still helps me with that.
I personally am hanging to, I think it's all semantics. I think everybody has their own way of expressing it. And that's actually how I came up with the name for this podcast, Spellbound. It's, you know, the idea that,
love it,
that, you know, originally words were seen as a magical power, magical ability to form words, you know, and to cast spells, you know, to spell. That's why we call it spelling, you know? So it's like, you know, that's what started this whole podcast for me, was this idea that words are so powerful and they can divide and they can unite and they're almost everything and they're almost all nothing all at the same time. So it's, I think it's important I just wish more people could not let words get in the way of their relationships, and that it was easier for people to accept others for, even if they describe things a little differently, even if they have different ideas, like it shouldn't matter. You should still be able to maintain relationships, and it shouldn't hinder anything. Mm-hmm. That's what I think.
Yeah.
And I love what you're doing at Sparrow Day. I think it's great.
Thanks, man. Thanks. Come again.
I want to.
Yes. Yes.
I want to. I'm also really enjoying my weekends, having been out of church.
I don't blame you.
I
don't blame you.
But I do think it's so important. I think what you're doing is so important, and I want to come back, and I will. I'm very exhausted all the time with three small kids.
Well, I'm not here to necessarily say it's important. It's certainly meaningful. I will say this, and I don't have hard science on this, but I think there's 700,000 clergy in America. So that's, that's pastors, priests, imams, rabbis, others. There's 700,000 clergy. I think there's probably less than 1,000, maybe less than 500, who are attempting to do what we're doing at Sparrow Day. So I appreciate you having me on your podcast, because we may be, who knows what is going to happen to us. We are trying something radical. And, you know, the Christian church shifts every 500 years. So I think we're in a major shift. So at 500, it got organized. At 1,000, the Eastern and Western church split. At 1,500, the Protestants began. And I think we're in another major. It's not just stylistically or methodologically, even philosophically. There is a major shift happening.
I think that's right.
In Christianity.
That's right. I think it'll be ultimately for the better.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
The church has always evolved, always.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, David, thanks so much for coming on. Is there anything you want to plug before we jump off, your Twitter or?
You can go to sparrowday.com. Okay. There are two Latin words, SPERODEI, sparrowday.com. And then you can find me at davidmosesperez.com. But if you're in Nashville, come visit Sparrow Day.
Even if you're Muslim.
Even if you're Muslim, a Jew, gay.
Buddhist.
Or yes, yes.
Miscellaneous.
Anybody.
Yeah, awesome.
Yes.
Thank you guys for listening. We hope you enjoyed this. If you want to follow Andrew and I, I'm at Julian Was Here on Twitter. Andrew is at Mars Raider. We do these episodes every Monday. Hope to have you back next week.
It was great. Thanks for listening.